Let's talk about Paul Manafort. The jury the other day in the Paul Manafort trial found him guilty on 8 counts of 18, 10 counts, no decision, and therefore mistrial on those, if I'm characterizing it correctly. He faces time in prison. This is the first of two trials that he will be facing. We've spent an awful lot of time talking about Michael Cohen, but we want to focus a little bit more on Paul Manafort and what this might mean for President Trump. Peter Hardy is a former federal prosecutor. He's a white-collar defense lawyer, self-described. He is also somebody who worked at one time with at least three of the four members of the defense team for Paul Manafort. He's tweeting. The Twitter handle is at Ballads Bar LLP. Peter Hardy, welcome. Thanks for being here today.
My pleasure. Thank you for having me.
Was it significant that there were 10 counts where Paul Manafort was found, where they couldn't come to a conclusion?
I don't really think so. I was a prosecutor myself, as you mentioned, and back in the day, we used to say to ourselves that one is enough, and that's true. I think what people are going to remember very shortly is the fact that he was convicted of 8 serious counts, across-the-board tax convictions, and the fact that the jury couldn't come to a conclusion on the other 10 is not really going to mean very much, including just for technical aspects of his sentencing.
I saw a quote that you had given to one news story, one reporter. We can speculate with plausibility that Mr. Manafort would never have been prosecuted and indicted had he not joined Trump or worked for Yanukovych. Which is the deciding factor, working for President Trump or having worked for Mr. Yanukovych, who was the president of Ukraine?
Well, so I guess continuing to with the theme of speculating with plausibility, I would say it would be probably working for Mr. Yanukovych, because the underlying investigation was really into folks who had ties with Eastern Europe. Certainly, I think the Kleeglites went on because he worked for Mr. Trump and therefore came to the interest and attention of the special counsel's office. So in that sense, just because you come to the attention of a team of government enforcement folks who have a lot of time and skill, certainly that put him over the edge. But I think initially it was the fact that he was involved with Mr. Yanukovych.
And that,
I am
and
speculating.
That brings to mind, though, the question, how does a prosecution like this start? In other words, does somebody come forward and say, hey, I've got some information on this guy? Or how do the alarm bells go off that all of a sudden the special prosecutor's office or the special counsel's office is looking at an individual, whether it's Paul Manafort or somebody else?
I think in this instance, it was records from overseas that were obtained by the U.S. government, which pertain to payments to him. I mean, there's all sorts of ways these days. There's you know, treaties between the United States and other countries where we share information with each other regarding, you know, possible tax violations and payments. There's a lot of there's a lot of avenues these days. I think in this case it was this ledger.
Once again, we're speaking with Peter Hardy as a former federal prosecutor. Talk about the strategy used by the defense here. What were they trying to do? Were they trying to just discredit Rick Gates, or were they trying to paint some kind of a picture that would let the jury decide that Paul Manafort was innocent of wrongdoing, that it was somebody else who was responsible for all the things that were done?
I think it was a classic defense of holding the government to its burden of beyond a reasonable doubt. And I think it made a lot of sense in this case. The charges are, despite all the evidence of the kind of ridiculous expenditures by Mr. Manafort, the charges were technical. There were some issues regarding the FBAR counts. That's the alleged failure to report an offshore account. So certainly they went after Mr. Gates. Certainly they suggested that it was really he who was responsible. They didn't put their client on the stand, which I think makes a lot of sense. I think in this case, they pretty much did everything right from the defense perspective. They didn't really have an opportunity to, you know, tell a full counter narrative, but I don't think that would have really worked. I think putting Mr. Manafort out on the stand would have, you know, probably been extremely problematic for the defense and would have allowed the prosecution to just make hay over all the expenditures. But at the end of the day, you know, even that, as well executed as that defense was, it just simply wasn't enough given the apparent, you know, overwhelming evidence, frankly.
Again, you mentioned FBAR. That's, I guess, what the foreign bank and financial accounts or something like that, I guess.
Yeah, that's the Bank Secrecy Act count where it's kind of like a tax count, but it's not exactly a tax count. It is a failure to report a offshore account.
Is there anything in or were there any charges that were related specifically to the 2016 campaign?
No.
Okay, so again, I go back to where how this got started. Was this just something that came up as a result of the original charge of the special counsel's office to go after Russian interference in the campaign? Then it was about collusion. Then it was about possibility of obstruction of justice. This seems not related to those.
Well, it's not directly related, but you know, please bear in mind that this was the subject of some litigation in this case. And, you know, even Judge Ellis, at the end of the day, ruled that this was a proper use of the authority at the special counsel's office. Basically, they followed the money that were paid by pro-Russian officials. So, you know, it's indirect, but it was not a misuse. And, you know, history tells us that once you have a special counsel or an independent counsel, they're going to follow the money. And they're going to, if they're confronted by evidence of illegality as a result of that, even if it's not 100% in the bailiwick of what they've originally been charged with, they're going to pursue that, and that's not improper.
Is there something in the next phase for Paul Manafort that is related to this trial? Is it different? Would the defense use a different strategy? I guess this is, again, in the category of speculation.
Yeah. I would not be surprised if they essentially did the same thing. These charges, in a way, are even more esoteric because they basically boil down to the alleged failure to register as an agent of a foreign government. As the defense has repeatedly noted, these cases are exceedingly rare, and the follow-on money laundering conspiracy rises or falls on those charges because if there's no underlying illegality, then there's no money laundering. Now, there's a little wrinkle here because there's also a couple of obstruction charges, which is probably going to make the life of the defense harder. They tend to do. I, again, would be surprised if they put Mr. Manafort on the stand, particularly now because he is a convicted felon.
I appreciate you spending time with us. You've made it a little clearer what happened. I think that, again, as you say, there's a lot of esoterica involved in this, but we watched it happen, and we will continue to watch the stories unfold. Peter Hardy, thanks for being with us on POTUS.
Thank you.
Peter Hardy, former federal prosecutor, worked at one time with some of the members of the Manafort defense team, not on this case, but at other times, joining us to talk about what happened in the Paul Manafort case. The Twitter handle is @BallardSparr, SPAHRLLP.